This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms by George R. R. Martin. Read for you by Harry Lloyd. The Hedge Knight. The story offered here takes place about 100 years prior to the events described in A Game of Thrones. The spring rains had softened the ground, so Dunk had no trouble digging the grave. He chose a spot on the western slope of a low hill, for the old man had always loved to watch the sunset. "Another day done," he would sigh. "And who knows what the morrow will bring us, eh, Dunk?" Well, one morrow had brought rains that soaked them to the bones, and the one after had brought wet, gusty winds, and the next a chill. By the fourth day, the old man was too weak to ride, and now he was gone. Only a few days past, he had been singing as they rode, the old song about going to Gulltown to see a fair maid, but instead of Gulltown, he'd sung of Ashford. "Off to Ashford to see the fair maid, hey-ho, hey-ho," Dunk thought miserably as he dug. When the hole was deep enough, he lifted the old man's body in his arms and carried him there. He had been a small man and slim, stripped of hauberk, helm, and sword belt. He seemed to weigh no more than a bag of leaves. Dunk was hugely tall for his age, a shambling, shaggy, big-boned boy of 16 or 17 years, no one was quite certain which, who stood closer to 7 feet than to 6, and had only just begun to fill out his frame. The old man had often praised his strength. He had always been generous in his praise. It was all he had to give. He laid him out in the bottom of the grave, and stood over him for a time. The smell of rain was in the air again, and he knew he ought to fill the hole before it broke, but it was hard to throw dirt down on that tired old face. "There ought to be a section here, to say some prayers over him, but he only has me." The old man had taught Dunk all he knew of swords and shields and lances, but had never been much good at teaching him words. "I'd leave your sword, but it would rust in the ground," he said at last, apologetic. "The gods will give you a new one, I guess. I wish you didn't die, sir." He paused, uncertain what else needed to be said. He didn't know any prayers, not all the way through. The old man had never been much for praying. "You were a true knight, and you never beat me when I didn't deserve it," he finally managed, "except that one time in Maidenpool. It was the inn boy who ate the widow woman's pie, not me. I told you." "Don't matter now. The gods keep you, sir." He kicked dirt in the hole, then began to fill it methodically, never looking at the thing at the bottom. "He had a long life," Dunk thought. "Must have been closer to 60 than to 50, and how many men can say that? At least he had lived to see another spring." The sun was westering as he fed the horses. There were three, his sway-backed Stot, the old man's palfrey, and Thunder, his war horse, who was ridden only in tourney and battle. The big brown stallion was not as swift or strong as he had once been, but he still had his bright eye and fierce spirit, and he was more valuable than everything else Dunk owned. "If I sold Thunder and old Chestnut, and the saddles and bridles too, I'd come away with enough silver to..." Dunk frowned. The only life he knew was the life of a hedge knight, riding from keep to keep, taking service with this lord and that lord, fighting in their battles and eating in their halls until the war was done, then moving on. There were tourneys from time to time as well, though less often, and he knew that some hedge knights turned robber during lean winters, though the old man never had. "I could find another hedge knight in need of a squire to tend his animals and clean his mail," he thought. "Or might be I could go to some city, to Lannisport or King's Landing, and join the city watch, or else..." He had piled the old man's things under an oak. The cloth purse contained 3 silver stags, 19 copper pennies, and a chipped garnet. Like most hedge knights, the greatest part of his worldly wealth had been tied up in his horses and weapons. Dunk now owned a chainmail hauberk that he had scoured the rust off 1,000 times, an iron half-helm with a broad nasal and a dent on the left temple, a sword belt of cracked brown leather, and a longsword in wooden leather scabbard, a dagger, a razor, a whetstone, greaves and gorget, an 8-foot war lance of turned ash topped by a cruel iron point, and an oaken shield with a scarred metal rim bearing the sigil of Sir Arlen of Penytree, a winged chalice, silver on brown. Dunk looked at the shield, scooped up the sword belt, and looked at the shield again. The belt was made for the old man's skinny hips. It would never do for him, no more than the hauberk would. He tied the scabbard to a length of hempen rope, knotted it around his waist, and drew the longsword. The blade was straight and heavy, good castle-forged steel, the grip soft leather wrapped over wood, the pommel a smooth, polished black stone. Plain as it was, the sword felt good in his hand, and Dunk knew how sharp it was, having worked it with whetstone and oilcloth many a night before they went to sleep. "It fits my grip as well as it ever fit his," he thought to himself, "and there is a tourney at Ashford Meadow." Sweetfoot had an easier gait than old Chestnut, but Dunk was still sore and tired when he spied the inner head, a tall daubin timber building beside a stream. The warm yellow light spilling from its windows looked so inviting that he could not pass it by. "I have 3 silvers, he told himself, "enough for a good meal and as much ale as I care to drink." As he dismounted, a naked boy emerged, dripping from the stream, and began to dry himself on a rough-spun brown cloak. "Are you the stable boy?" Dunk asked him. The lad looked to be no more than 8 or 9, a pasty-faced, skinny thing, his bare feet caked in mud up to the ankle. His hair was the queerest thing about him. He had none. "I want my palfrey rubbed down, and oats for all 3. Can you tend to them?" The boy looked at him brazenly.
"I could, if I wanted."
Dunk frowned.
"I'll have none of that. I'm a knight, I'll have you know."
"You don't look to be a knight."
"Do all knights look the same?"
"No, but they don't look like you either. Your sword belt's made of rope."
"So long as it holds my scabbard, it serves. Now see to my horses. You'll get a copper if you do well, and a clout in the ear if you don't."
He did not wait to see how the stable boy took that, but turned away and shouldered through the door. At this hour he would have expected the inn to be crowded, but the common room was almost empty. A young lordling in a fine damask mantle was passed out at one table, snoring softly into a pool of spilled wine. Otherwise there was no one. Dunk looked around uncertainly until a stout, short, whey-faced woman emerged from the kitchens and said,
"Sit where you like. Is it ale you want or food?"
"Both." Dunk took a chair by the window, well away from the sleeping man.
"There's good lamb, roasted with a crust of herbs, and some ducks my son shot down. Which will you have?"
He had not eaten at an inn in half a year or more.
"Both."
The woman laughed.
"Well, you're big enough for it."
She drew a tankard of ale and brought it to his table.
"Will you be wanting a room for the night as well?"
"No." Dunk would have liked nothing better than a soft straw mattress and a roof above his head. But he needed to be careful with his coin. The ground would serve.
"Some food, some ale, and it's on to Ashford for me. How much farther is it?"
"A day's ride. At Bear North when the road forks at the Burned Mill. Has my boy seen to your horses, or has he run off again?"
"No, he's there," said Dunk.
"You seem to have no custom."
"Well, half the town's gone to see the tourney. My own would as well, if I allowed it. They'll have this inn when I go, but the boy would sooner swagger about with soldiers, and a girl turns to sighs and giggles every time a knight rides by. I swear I couldn't tell you why. Knights are built the same as other men, and I never knew a joust to change the price of eggs."
She eyed Dunk curiously. His sword and shield told her one thing, his rope belt and rathspun tunic quite another.
"You're bound for the tourney yourself?"
He took a sip of the ale before he answered. A nut-brown colour it was, and thick on the tongue, the way he liked it.
"Aye,"
he said.
"I mean to be a champion."
"Do you now?"
the innkeep answered, polite enough.
Across the room, the lordling raised his head from the wine puddle. His face had a sallow, unhealthy cast to it beneath a rat's nest of sandy brown hair, and blond stubble crusted his chin. He rubbed his mouth, blinked at Dunk, and said,
"I dreamed of you."
His hand trembled as he pointed a finger.
"You, stay away from me, do you hear? You, stay well away!"
Dunk stared at him uncertainly.
"My lord?"
The innkeep leaned close.
"Never you mind that one, sir. All he does is drink and talk about his dreams. I'll see about that food."
She bustled off.
"Food?"
The lordling made the word an obscenity.
He staggered to his feet, one hand on the table to keep himself from falling.
"I'm going to be sick," he announced.
The front of his tunic was crusty red with old wine stains.
"I wanted a whore, but there's none to be found here. All gone to Ashford Meadow. God's be good, I need some wine."
He lurched unsteadily from the common room, and Dunk heard him climbing steps, singing under his breath.
"A sad creature," thought Dunk. "But why did he think he knew me?"
He pondered that a moment over his ale. The lamb was as good as any he had ever eaten, and the duck was even better, cooked with cherries and lemon, and not near as greasy as most. The innkeep brought buttered peas as well, and oaten bread still hot from her oven. "This is what it means to be a knight," he told himself as he sucked the last bit of meat off the bone. "Good food, and ale whenever I want it, and no one to clout me in the head." He had a second tankard of ale with the meal, a third to wash it down, and a fourth because there was no one to tell him he couldn't. And when he was done, he paid the woman with a silver stag and still got back a fistful of coppers. It was full dark by the time Dunk emerged. His stomach was full and his purse was a little lighter, but he felt good as he walked to the stables. Ahead, he heard a horse whicker.
"Easy, lad," a boy's voice said.
Dunk quickened his step, frowning. He found the stable boy mounted on Thunder and wearing the old man's armor. The hauberk was longer than he was, and he'd had to tilt the helm back on his bald head or else it would have covered his eyes. He looked utterly intent and utterly absurd. Dunk stopped in the stable door and laughed. The boy looked up, flushed, vaulted to the ground.
"My lord, I did not mean..."
"Thief," Dunk said, trying to sound stern. "Take off that armor and be glad that Thunder didn't kick you in that fool head. He's a warhorse, not a boy's pony."
The boy took off the helm and flung it to the straw.
"I could ride him as well as you," he said,
"bold as you please."
"Close your mouth. I want none of your insolence. The hauberk, too. Take it off. What did you think you were doing? How can I tell you with my mouth closed?"
The boy squirmed out of the chainmail and let it fall.
"Well, you can open your mouth to answer," said Dunk.
"Now pick up that mail, shake off the dirt and put it back where you found it, and the half-elm too. Did you feed the horses, as I told you, and rub down Sweetfoot?"
"Yes," the boy said, as he shook straw from the mail. "You're going to Ashford, aren't you? Take me with you, sir."
The innkeeper had warned him of this.
"And what might your mother say to that?"
"My mother?" The boy wrinkled up his face. "My mother's dead. She wouldn't say anything."
He was surprised. Wasn't the innkeep his mother? Perhaps he was only prenticed to her. Dunk's head was a little fuzzy from the ale.
"Are you an orphan boy?" he asked uncertainly.
"Are you?"
the boy threw back.
"I was once," Dunk admitted,
"till the old man took me in."
"If you took me, I could squire for you."
"I have no need of a squire," he said.
"Every knight needs a squire," the boy said. "You look as though you need one more than most."
Dunk raised a hand threateningly.
"And you look as though you need a clout in the ear, it seems to me. Fill me a sack of oats. I'm off for Ashford. Alone."
If the boy was frightened, he hid it well. For a moment, he stood there defiant, his arms crossed. But just as Dunk was about to give up on him, the lad turned and went for the oats. Dunk was relieved.
"A pity I couldn't. He has a good life here at the inn. A better one than he'd have squiring for a hedge knight. Taking him would be no kindness."
He could still feel the lad's disappointment, though. As he mounted Sweetfoot and took up Thunder's lead, Dunk decided that a copper penny might cheer him.
"Here, lad, for your help."
He flipped the coin down at him with a smile, but the stable boy made no attempt to catch it. It fell in the dirt between his bare feet, and there he let it lie.
"He'll scoop it up as soon as I'm gone," Dunk told himself.
He turned the palfrey and rode from the inn, leading the other two horses. The trees were bright with moonlight, and the sky was cloudless and speckled with stars. Yet as he headed down the road, he could feel the stable boy watching his back, sullen and silent. The shadows of the afternoon were growing long when Dunk reined up on the edge of broad Ashford Meadow. 3 score pavilions had already risen on the grassy field. Some were small, some large, some square, some round, some of sailcloth, some of linen, some of silk. But all were brightly coloured, with long banners streaming from their centre poles, brighter than a field of wildflowers, with rich reds and sunny yellows, countless shades of green and blue, deep blacks and greys and purples. The old man had ridden with some of these knights,
Others Dunk knew from tales told in common rooms and round campfires. Though he had never learned the magic of reading or writing, the old man had been relentless when it came to teaching him heraldry, often drilling him as they rode. The nightingales belonged to Lord Cairn of the Marches, as skilled with the high harp as he was with a lance. The crowned stag was for Sir Lionel Baratheon, the Laughing Storm. Dunk picked out the Tarly Huntsman, House Dondarrion's Purple Lightning, the Red Apple of the Fossaways. There roared the Lion of Lannister, gold on crimson, and there the dark green sea turtle of the Estamont swam across a pale green field. The brown tent beneath Red Stallion could only belong to Sir Otho Bracken, who was called the Brute of Bracken, since slaying Lord Quentin Blackwood 3 years past during a tourney at King's Landing. Dunk heard that Sir Otho struck so hard with the blunted long axe that he staved in the visor of Lord Blackwood's helm and the face beneath it. He saw some Blackwood banners as well, on the west edge of the meadow, as distant from Sir Otho as they could be. Marbrand, Malister, Cargill, Westerling, Swan, Mullendore, Hightower, Florent, Frey, Penrose, Stokeworth, Derry, Parren, Wilde. It seemed as though every lordly house of the west and south had sent a knight or three to Ashford to see the fair maid and brave the lists in her honour. Yet however fine their pavilions were to look upon, he knew there was no place there for him. A threadbare wool cloak would be all the shelter he had tonight. While the lords and great knights dined on capons and suckling pigs, Dunk's supper would be a hard, stringy piece of salt beef. He knew full well that if he made his camp upon that gaudy field, he would need to suffer both silent scorn and open mockery. A few, perhaps, would treat him kindly, yet in a way that was almost worse. A hedge knight must hold tight to his pride. Without it, he was no more than a sellsword. I must earn my place in that company. If I fight well, some lord may take me into his household. I will ride in noble company then, and eat fresh meat every night in a castle hall, and raise my own pavilion at tourneys. But first, I must do well. Reluctantly, he turned his back on the tourney grounds and led his horses into the trees. On the outskirts of the great meadow, a good half mile from town and castle, he found a place where a bend in a brook had formed a deep pool. Reeds grew thick along its edge, and a tall, leafy elm presided over all. The spring grass there was as green as any knight's banner, and soft to the touch. It was a pretty spot, and no one had yet laid claim to it. "This will be my pavilion," Dunk told himself, "a pavilion roofed with leaves, greener even than the banners of the Tyrells and the Estamonts." His horses came first. After they had been tended, he stripped and waded into the pool to wash away the dust of travel. "A true knight is cleanly as well as godly," the old man always said, insisting that they wash themselves head to heels every time the moon turned, whether they smelt sour or not. Now that he was a knight, Dunk vowed he would do the same. He sat naked under the elm while he dried, enjoying the warmth of the spring air on his skin, as he watched a dragonfly move lazily amongst the reeds. Why would they name it a dragonfly? He wondered. Looks nothing like a dragon. Not that Dunk had ever seen a dragon. The old man had, though. Dunk had heard the story half 100 times, how Sir Arlen had been just a little boy when his grandfather had taken him to King's Landing, and how they'd seen the last dragon there the year before it died. She'd been a green female, small and stunted, her wings withered. None of her eggs had ever hatched. "Some say King Aegon poisoned her," the old man would tell. "The third Aegon, that would be, not King Daeron's father, but the one they named Dragonbane, or Aegon the Unlucky. He was afraid of dragons, for he'd seen his uncle's beast devour his own mother. The summers have been shorter since the last dragon died, and the winters longer and crueler." The air began to cool as the sun dipped below the tops of the trees. When Dunk felt goose flesh prickling his arms, he beat his tunic and breeches against the trunk of the elm to knock off the worst of the dirt and donned them once again. On the morrow he could seek out the master of the games and enroll his name, but he had other matters he ought to look into tonight if he hoped to challenge. He did not need to study his reflection in the water to know that he did not look much a knight, so he slung Sir Arlen's shield across his back to display the sigil. Hobbling the horses, Dunk left them to crop the thick green grass beneath the elm as he set out on foot for the tourney grounds. In normal times, the meadow served as a commons for the folk of Ashford Town across the river, but now it was transformed. A second town had sprung up overnight, a town of silk instead of stone.
larger and fairer than its elder sister. Dozens of merchants had erected their stalls along the edge of the field, selling felts and fruits, belts and boots, hides and hawks, earthenware, gemstones, pewterwork, spices, feathers, and all manner of other goods. Jugglers, puppeteers, and magicians wandered amongst the crowds, plying their trades, as did the whores and cutpurses. Dunk kept a wary hand on his coin. When he caught the smell of sausages sizzling over a smoky fire, his mouth began to water. He bought one with a copper from his pouch and a horn of ale to wash it down. As he ate, he watched a painted wooden knight battle a painted wooden dragon. The puppeteer who worked the dragon was good to watch too. A tall drink of water with the olive skin and black hair of Dawn. She was slim as a lance with no breasts to speak of. But Dunk liked her face and the way her fingers made the dragon snap and slither at the end of its strings. He would have tossed the girl a copper if he'd had one to spare, but just now he needed every coin. There were armourers amongst the merchants, as he had hoped. A Tairoshi with a forked blue beard was selling ornate helms, gorgeous, fantastical things, wrought in the shapes of birds and beasts and chased with gold and silver. Elsewhere he found a sword maker hawking cheap steel blades, and another whose work was much finer, but it was not a sword he lacked. The man he needed was all the way down at the end of the row. A shirt of fine chainmail and a pair of lobstered steel gauntlets displayed on the table before him. Dunk inspected them closely. "You do good work," he said.
"None better."
A stumpy man, the smith was no more than 5 feet tall, yet wide as Dunk about the chest and arms. He had a black beard, huge hands, and no trace of humility. "I need armor for the tourney," Dunk told him. "A suit of good mail with gorget, greaves, and great helm." The old man's half-helm would fit his head, but he wanted more protection for his face than a nasal bar alone could provide. The armourer looked him up and down.
"You're a big one, but I've armoured bigger."
He came out from behind the table.
"Kneel. I want to measure those shoulders. Aye, and that thick neck of yours."
Dunk knelt. The armourer laid a length of knotted rawhide along his shoulders, grunted, slipped it about his throat, grunted again.
"Lift your arm. No, the right."
He grunted a third time.
"Now you can stand."
The inside of a leg, the thickness of his calf, and the size of his waist elicited further grunts.
"I have some pieces in my wagon that might do for you,"
the man said when he was done.
"Nothing prettied up with gold or silver, mind you, just good steel, strong and plain. I make helms that look like helms, not winged pigs and queer foreign fruits. But mine will serve you better if you take a lance in the face."
"Well, that's all I want," said Dunk. "How much?"
800 stags from feeling kindly."
800? It was more than he'd expected. I could trade you some old armour made for a smaller man, a half-helm, a male hauberk."
"Steely Pate sells only his own work," the man declared. "But it might be I could make use of the metal. If it's not too rusted, I'll take it and armour you for 600.
Dunk could beseech Pate to give him the armour on trust, but he knew what sort of answer that request would likely get. He had travelled with the old man long enough to learn that merchants were notoriously mistrustful of hedge knights, some of whom were little better than robbers. "I'll give you 2 silvers now, and the armour and the rest of the coin on the morrow." The armourer studied him a moment.
2 silvers buys you a day. After that, I sell my work to the next man."
Dunk scooped the stags out of his pouch and placed them in the armourer's calloused hand. "You'll get it all. I mean to be a champion here."
"Do you?"
Pate bit one of the coins.
"And these others, I suppose they all came just to cheer you on."
The moon was well up by the time he turned his steps back toward his elm. Behind him, Ashford Meadow was ablaze with torchlight. The sounds of song and laughter drifted across the grass, but his own mood was somber. He could think of only one way to raise the coin for his armor, and if he should be defeated. "One victory is all I need," he muttered aloud. "That's not so much to hope for." Even so, the old man would never have hoped for it. Sir Arlen had not ridden a tilt since the day he had been unhorsed by the Prince of Dragonstone in a tourney at Storm's End many years before. "It is not every man who can boast that he broke 7 lances against the finest knight in the 7 kingdoms, he would say. "I could never hope to do better, so why should I try?" Dunk had suspected that Sir Arlen's age had more to do with it than the Prince of Dragonstone did. But he never dared say as much. The old man had his pride, even at the last. "I am quick and strong. He always said so. What was true for him need not be true for me," he told himself stubbornly. He was moving through a patch of weed, chewing over his chances in his head, when he saw the flicker of firelight through the bushes. What was this? Dunk did not stop to think. Suddenly his sword was in his hand and he was crashing through the grass. He burst out, roaring and cursing, only to jerk to a sudden halt at the sight of the boy beside the campfire.
You!
He lowered the sword.
What are you doing here?
Cooking a fish, said the bald boy.
Do you want some? I meant, how did you get here? Did you steal a horse?
I rode in the back of a cart, with a man who was bringing some lambs to the castle for my Lord of Ashford's table.
Well, you best see if he's gone yet, or find another cart. I won't have you here.
You can't make me go, the boy said, impertinent. I'd had enough of that inn.
I'll have no more insolence from you, Dunk warned. I should throw you over my horse right now and take you home.
Well, you'd need to ride all the way to King's Landing, said the boy. You'd miss the tourney. King's Landing? For a moment, Dunk wondered if he was being mocked. But the boy had no way of knowing that he had been born in King's Landing as well. Another wretch from Fleabottom, like as not. And who can blame him for wanting out of that place? He felt foolish, standing there with sword in hand over an 8-year-old orphan. He sheathed it, glowering so the boy would see that he would suffer no nonsense. I ought to give him a good beating at the least, he thought. But the child looked so pitiful, he could not bring himself to hit him. He glanced around the camp. The fire was burning merrily within a neat circle of rocks. The horses had been brushed, and clothes were hanging from the elm, drying above the flames. What are those doing there?
I washed them, the boy said, and I groomed the horses, made the fire, and caught this fish. I would have raised your pavilion, but I couldn't find one.
There's my pavilion.
Dunk swept a hand above his head at the branches of the tall elm that loomed above them.
That's a tree, the boy said, unimpressed.
It's all the pavilion a true knight needs. I'd sooner sleep under the stars than in some smoky tent.
What if it rains?
The tree will shelter me.
Trees leak.
Dunk laughed. So they do.
Well, if truth be told, I lack the coin for a pavilion. And you best turn that fish, or it'll be burned on the bottom and raw on top. You'd never make a kitchen boy.
I would if I wanted, the boy said. But he turned the fish.
What happened to your hair? Dunk asked of him.
The maesters shaved it off.
Suddenly self-conscious, the boy pulled up the hood of his dark brown cloak, covering his head. Dunk had heard that they did that sometimes, to treat lice or rootworms or certain sicknesses.
Are you ill?
No,
said the boy.
What's your name?
Dunk, he said.
The wretched boy laughed aloud, as if that was the funniest thing he'd ever heard.
Dunk, he said. Sir Dunk? That's no name for a knight. Is it short for Duncan?
Was it? The old man had called him just Dunk for as long as he could recall. He did not remember much of his life before.
Duncan, yes, he said. Sir Duncan of...
Dunk had no other name, nor any house. Sir Arlen had found him living wild in the stews and alleys of Fleabottom. He'd never known his father or mother. What was he to say? Sir Duncan of Fleabottom did not sound very knightly. He could take Pennytree, but what if they asked him where it was? Dunk had never been to Pennytree, nor had the old man talked much about it. He frowned for a moment, then blurted out, Sir Duncan the Tall! He was tall, no one could dispute that, and it sounded puissant. Though the little sneak did not seem to think so.
I've never heard of any Sir Duncan the Tall.
Do you know every knight in the Seven Kingdoms, then?
The boy looked at him boldly.
The good ones?
I'm as good as any. After the tourney, they'll all know that. Do you have a name, thief?
The boy hesitated.
Egg, he said.
Dunk did not laugh. His head does look like an egg. Small boys can be cruel, and grown men as well.
Egg, he said. I should beat you bloody and send you on your way, but the truth is, I have no pavilion and I have no squire either. If you'll swear to do as you're told, I'll let you serve me for the tourney. After that, well, we'll see. If I decide you're worth your keep, you'll have clothes on your back and food in your belly. And the clothes might be rough spun, and the food salt beef and salt fish, and maybe some venison from time to time where there are no foresters about. But you won't go hungry, and I promise not to beat you, except when you deserve it.
Egg smiled.
Yes, my lord.
Sir,
Dunk corrected, I'm only a hedge knight. He wondered if the old man was looking down on him.
I will teach him the arts of battle, the same as you taught me, sir. He seems a likely lad. Might be one day he'll make a knight.
The fish was still a little raw on the inside when they ate it, and the boy had not removed all the bones, but it still tasted a well better than hard salt beef. Egg soon fell asleep beside the dying fire. Dunk lay on his back nearby, his big hands behind his head, gazing up at the night sky. He could hear distant music from the tawny grounds half a mile away. The stars were everywhere, thousands and thousands of them. One fell as he was watching, a bright green streak that flashed across the black and then was gone. A falling star brings luck to him who sees it, Dunk thought. But the rest of them are all in their pavilions by now, staring up at silk instead of sky. So the luck is mine alone. In the morning, he woke to the sound of a cock crowing. Egg was still there, curled up beneath the old man's second-best cloak. Well, the boy did not run off during the night, that's a start. He prodded him awake with his foot. Up! There's work to do. The boy rose quick enough, rubbing his eyes. Help me saddle Sweetfoot, Dunk told him. What about breakfast? There's salt beef, after we're done. I'd sooner eat the horse, Egg said. Sir. You'll eat my fist if you don't do as you're told. Get the brushes. They're in the saddle sack. Yes, that one. Together, they brushed out the palfrey's sorrel coat, hefted Sir Arlen's best saddle over her back, and cinched it tight. Egg was a good worker once he put his mind to it, Dunk saw. I expect I'll be gone most of the day, he told the boy as he mounted. You ought to stay here and put the camp in order. Make sure no other thieves come nosing about. Can I have a sword to run them off with? Egg asked. He had blue eyes, Dunk saw, very dark, almost purple. His bald head made them seem huge somehow. No, said Dunk, and nice enough, and you'd best be here when I come back, do you hear me? Rob me and run off, and I'll hunt you down, I swear I will, with dogs.
You don't have any dogs, Egg pointed out.
I'll get some, said Dunk, just for you. He turned Sweetfoot's head toward the meadow and moved off at a brisk trot, hoping the threat would be enough to keep the boy honest. Save for the clothes on his back, the armor in his sack, and the horse beneath him, everything Dunk owned in the world was back at that camp. I am a great fool to trust the boy so far. It's no more than the old man did for me, he reflected. The mother must have sent him to me so that I could pay my debt. As he crossed the field, he heard the ring of hammers from the riverside, where carpenters were nailing together jousting barriers and raising a lofty viewing stand. A few new pavilions were going up as well, while the knights who had come earlier slept off last night's revels or sat to break their fasts. Dunk could smell wood smoke and bacon as well. To the north of the meadow flowed the river Cockleswent, a vassal stream to the mighty Mander. Beyond the shallow ford lay town and castle. Dunk had seen many a market town during his journeys with the old man. This was prettier than most. The whitewashed houses with their thatched roofs had an inviting aspect to them. When he was smaller, he used to wonder what it would be like to live in such a place, to sleep every night with a roof over your head, and wake every morning with the same walls wrapped around you. Maybe that soon I'll know. Aye, an egg too. It could happen. Stranger things happened every day. Ashford Castle was a stone structure built in the shape of a triangle, with round towers rising 30 feet tall at each point, and thick, crenellated walls running between. Orange banners flew from its battlements, displaying the white sun and chevron sigil of its lord. Men-at-arms in orange and white livery stood outside the gates with halberds, watching people come and go, seemingly more intent on joking with a pretty milkmaid than in keeping anyone out. Dunk reined up in front of the short, bearded man he took for their captain, and asked for the master of the games.
It's Plummer you want. He's steward here. I'll show you.
Inside the yard, a stable boy took Sweetfoot for him. Dunk slung Sir Arlen's battered shield over a shoulder and followed the guard's captain back of the stables to a turret built into an angle of the curtain wall. Steep stone steps led up to the wall walk.
Come to enter your master's name for the lists?
The captain asked as they climbed.
It's my own name I'll be putting in.
Is it now?
Was the man smirking. Dunk was not certain.
That door there. I'll leave you to it and get back to my post.
When Dunk pushed open the door, the steward was sitting at a trestle table, scratching on a piece of parchment with a quill. He had thinning grey hair and a narrow, pinched face.
Yes, he said, looking up.
What do you want, man?
Dunk pulled shut the door. Are you Plummer the steward? I came for the tawny, to enter the lists. Plummer pursed his lips. My lord's tawny is a contest for knights. Are you a knight? He nodded, wondering if his ears were red. A knight with a name, mayhaps? Dunk. Why had he said that? Sir Duncan, the Tall.
And where might you be from, Sir Duncan the Tall?
Every place. I was squire to Sir Arlen of Pennytree since I was 5 or 6. This is a shield.
He showed it to the steward. He was coming to the tourney, but he caught a chill and died, so I came in his stead. He knighted me, before he passed, with his own sword.
Dunk drew the longsword and laid it on the scarred wooden table between them. The master of the lists gave the blade no more than a glance.
A sword it is, for a certainty.
I've never heard of this Arlen of Pennytree, however. You were his squire, you say?
He always said he meant for me to be a knight, as he was. When he was dying, he called for his longsword and bade me kneel. He touched me once on my right shoulder and once on my left and said some words, and when I got up, he said I was a knight.
Humph. The man Plummer rubbed his nose.
Any knight can make a knight, it is true, though it is more customary to stand a vigil and be anointed by a septon before taking your vows.
Were there any witnesses to your dubbing?
Only a robin up in a thorn tree. I heard it as the old man was saying the words. He charged me to be a good knight and true, to obey the 7 gods, defend the weak and innocent, serve my lord faithfully, and defend the realm with all my might. And I swore that I would.
No doubt.
Plummer did not deign to call him sir, Dunk could not help but notice.
Well, I shall need to consult with Lord Ashford. Will you or your late master be known to any of the good knights here assembled?
Dunk thought a moment.
There was a pavilion flying the banner of House Dondarrion, the black with purple lightning.
That would be Sir Manfred of that house.
Sir Arlen served his lord father in Dawn 3 years past. Sir Manfred might remember me.
I would advise you to speak to him.
If he will vouch for you, bring him here with you on the morrow at this same time.
As you say, my lord. He started for the door.
Sir Duncan,
the steward called after him.
Dunk turned back. You are aware, the man said, that those vanquished in tourney forfeit their arms, armour and horse to the victors, and must needs ransom them back.
I know.
And do you have the coin to pay such ransom?
Now he knew his ears were red.
I won't have need of coin, he said, praying it was true.
All I need is one victory. If I win my first tilt, I'll have the loser's armour and horse, or his gold, and I can stand a loss myself.
He walked slowly down the steps, reluctant to get on with what he must do next. In the yard, he collared one of the stable boys. I must speak with Lord Ashford's master of horse.
I'll find them for you.
It was cool and dim in the stables. An unruly grey stallion snapped at him as he passed, but Sweetfoot only whickered softly and nuzzled his hand when he raised it to her nose.
You're a good girl, aren't you? He murmured.
The old man always said that a knight should never love a horse, since more than a few were like to die under him, but he never heeded his own counsel either. Dunk had often seen him spend his last copper on an apple for Old Chestnut, or some oats for Sweetfoot and Thunder. The palfrey had been Sir Arlen's riding horse, and she had borne him tirelessly over thousands of miles, all up and down the 7 kingdoms. Dunk felt as though he was betraying an old friend, but what choice did he have? Chestnut was too old to be worth much of anything, and Thunder must carry him in the lists. Some time passed before the master of horse deigned to appear. As he waited, Dunk heard a blare of trumpets from the walls and voices in the yard. Curious, he led Sweetfoot to the stable door to see what was happening. A large party of knights and mounted archers poured through the gates, 100 men at least, riding some of the most splendid horses that Dunk had ever seen.
Some great lord has come.
He grabbed the arm of a stable boy as he ran past.
Who are they?
The boy looked at him queerly.
Can't you see the banners?
He wrenched free and hurried off.
The banners?
As Dunk turned his head, a gust of wind lifted the black silk pennon atop the tall staff, and the fierce three-headed dragon of House Targaryen seemed to spread its wings, breathing scarlet fire. The banner-bearer was a tall knight in white scale armor chased with gold, a pure white cloak streaming from his shoulders.
Two of the other riders were armoured in white from head to heel as well. Kingsguard knights with the royal banner. Small wonder Lord Ashford and his sons came hurrying out the doors of the keep, and the fair maid too, a short girl with yellow hair and a round pink face. She does not seem so fair to me, Dunk thought. The puppet girl was prettier.
Boy, let go of that nag and see you to my horse.
A rider had dismounted in front of the stables. He's talking to me, Dunk realized.
I'm not a stable boy, my lord. Not clever enough.
The speaker wore a black cloak bordered in scarlet satin, but underneath was raiment bright as flame, all reds and yellows and golds. Slim and straight as a dirk, though only of middling height, he was near Dunk's own age. Curls of silver-gold hair framed a face sculpted and imperious. High brow and sharp cheekbones, straight nose, pale, smooth skin without blemish. His eyes were a deep violet colour.
Well, if you cannot manage a horse, fetch me some wine and a pretty wench.
I'm no serving man either. I have the honour to be a knight.
Knighthood has fallen on sad days, said the princeling.
But then one of the stable boys came rushing up, and he turned away to hand in the reins of his palfrey, a splendid blood bay. Dunk was forgotten in an instant. Relieved, he slunk back inside the stables to wait for the master of horse. He felt ill at ease enough around the lords and their pavilions. He had no business speaking to princes. That the beautiful stripling was a prince, he had no doubt. The Targaryens were the blood of lost Valyria across the seas, and their silver-gold hair and violet eyes set them apart from common men. Dunk knew Prince Baelor was older, but the youth might well have been one of his sons. Valar, who was often called the young prince to set him apart from his father, or Mataris, the even younger prince, as old Lord Swan's fool had named him once. There were other princelings as well, cousins to Valar and Mataris. King Daeron the Good had 4 grown sons, 3 with sons of their own. The line of the Dragon Kings had almost died out during his father's day, but it was commonly said that Daeron the Second and his sons had left it secure for all time.
You, man, you asked for me!
Lord Ashford's master of horse had a red face, made redder by his orange livery, and a brusque manner of speaking.
What is it? I ain't no time for...
I want to sell this palfrey. Dunk broke in quickly, before the man could dismiss him. She's a good horse, sure of foot.
I have no time, I tell ye!
The man gave Sweetfoot no more than a glance.
My lord of Ashford has no need of such. Take her to the town. Perhaps Henley will give you a silver or 3.
And that quick, he was turning away.
Thank you, my lord, Dunk said before he could go.
My lord, has the king come? The master of horse laughed at him.
No, thank the gods! This infestation of princes is trailing off. Where am I going to find the stalls for all these animals and fodder?
He strode off, shouting at his stable boys. By the time Dunk left the stable, Lord Ashford had escorted his princely guests into the hall, but 2 of the Kingsguard knights in their white armour and snowy cloaks still lingered in the yard, talking with the captain of the guard. Dunk halted before them.
My lords, I am Sir Duncan the Tall.
Well met, Sir Duncan, answered the bigger of the white knights. I am Sir Roland Craikhall, and this is my sworn brother, Sir Donal of Duskendale.
The 7 champions of the Kingsguard were the most puissant warriors in all the 7 kingdoms, saving only perhaps the Crown Prince, Baelor Breakspear himself.
Have you come to enter the lists? Dunk asked anxiously.
It would not be fitting for us to ride against those we are sworn to protect, answered Sir Donal, red of hair and beard. Prince Valar has the honour to be one of Lady Ashford's champions, explained Sir Roland, and 2 of his cousins mean to challenge. The rest of us have come only to watch.
Relieved, Dunk thanked the White Knights for their kindness and rode out through the castle gates before another prince should think to accost him. 3 princelings, he pondered as he turned the palfrey toward the streets of Ashford town. Valar was the eldest son of Prince Baelor, 2nd in line to the Iron Throne, but Dunk did not know how much of his father's fabled prowess with lance and sword he might have inherited. About the other Targaryen princes, he knew even less.
What will I do if I have to ride against a prince? Will I even be allowed to challenge one so highborn?
He did not know the answer. The old man had often said he was thick as a castle wall, and just now he felt it. Henley liked the look of Sweetfoot well enough until he heard Dunk wanted to sell her. Then all the stablemen could see in her were faults.
He offered 300 silvers. Dunk said he must have 3,000. After much arguing and cursing, they settled at 750 silver stags. That was a deal closer to Henley's starting price than to Dunk's, which made him feel the loser in the tilt. But the stableman would go no higher, so in the end he had no choice but to yield. A second argument began when Dunk declared that the price did not include the saddle, and Henley insisted that it had. Finally, it was all settled. As Henley left to fetch his coin, Dunk stroked Sweetfoot's mane and told her to be brave. "If I win, I'll come back and buy you again, I promise." He had no doubt that all the palfrey's flaws would vanish in the intervening days, and she would be worth twice what she was today. The stableman gave him 3 gold pieces and the rest in silver. Dunk bit one of the gold coins and smiled. He had never tasted gold before, nor handled it. Dragons, men called the coins, since they were stamped with the 3-headed dragon of House Targaryen on one side. The other bore the likeness of the king. 2 of the coins Henley gave him had King Daeron's face. The 3rd was older, well-worn, and showed a different man. His name was there under his head, but Dunk could not read the letters. Gold had been shaved off its edges, too, he saw. He pointed this out to Henley, and loudly. The stableman grumbled, but handed over another few silvers and a fistful of coppers to make up the weight. Dunk handed a few of the coppers right back, and nodded at Sweetfoot. "That's for her," he said. "See that she has some oats tonight. Aye, and an apple, too." With the shield on his arm and the sack of old armour slung over his shoulder, Dunk set out on foot through the sunny streets of Ashford Town. The heft of all that coin in his pouch made him feel queer, almost giddy on one hand and anxious on the other. The old man had never trusted him with more than a coin or two at a time. He could live a year on this much money. And what will I do when it's gone? Sell Thunder? That road ended in beggary or outlawry. This chance will never come again. I must risk all. By the time he splashed back across the ford to the south bank of the Coppleswent, the morning was almost done, and the tawny grounds had come to life once more. The wine sellers and sausage makers were doing a brisk trade, a dancing bear was shuffling along to his master's playing, as a singer sang the bear, and the maiden fair. Jugglers were juggling, and the puppeteers were just finishing another fight. Dunk stopped to watch the wooden dragon slain. When the puppet knight cut its head off and the red sawdust spilled out onto the grass, he laughed aloud and threw the girl 2 coppers. "One for last night," he called. She caught the coins in the air and threw him back a smile as sweet as any he had ever seen. Is it me she smiles at? Or the coins? Dunk had never been with a girl, and they made him nervous. Once, 3 years passed, when the old man's purse was full after half a year in the service of blind Lord Florent, he told Dunk the time had come to take him to a brothel and make him a man. He'd been drunk, though, and when he was sober, he did not remember. Dunk had been too embarrassed to remind him. He was not certain he wanted a whore, anyway. If he could not have a high-born maiden like a proper knight, he wanted one who at least liked him more than his silver. "Will you drink a horn of ale?" he asked the puppet girl, as she was scooping the sawdust blood back into her dragon. "With me, I mean. Or a sausage. I had a sausage last night. It was good. They're made with pork, I think." "I thank you, my lord, but we have another show." The girl rose and ran off to the fierce fat Dornish woman who worked the puppet knight, while Dunk stood there feeling stupid. He liked the way she ran, though. A pretty girl, and tall. I would not have to kneel to kiss that one. He knew how to kiss. A tavern girl had showed him one night in Lannisport a year ago, but she'd been so short, she had to sit on the table to reach his lips. The memory made his ears burn. What a great fool he was. It was jousting he should be thinking about, not kissing. Lord Ashford's carpenters were whitewashing the waist-high wooden barriers that would separate the jousters. Dunk watched them work a while. There were 5 lanes, arrayed north to south, so none of the competitors would ride with the sun in his eyes. A 3-tiered viewing stand had been raised on the eastern side of the lists, with an orange canopy to shield the lords and ladies from rain and sun. Most would sit on benches, but 4 high-backed chairs had been erected in the centre of the platform for Lord Ashford, the fair maid, and the visiting princes. On the eastern verge of the meadow, a quintain had been set up, and 12 knights were tilting at it, sending the pole arms spinning every time they struck the splintered shield suspended from one end. Dunk watched the brute of Bracken take his turn. Then Lord Cairn of the Marches. "I do not have as good a seat as any of them," he thought uneasily. Elsewhere, men were training afoot, going at each other with wooden swords while their squires stood shouting ribald advice. Dunk watched a stocky youth try to hold off a muscular knight who seemed lithe and quick as a mountain cat. Both had the red apple of the Fossaways painted on their shields, but the younger man's was soon hacked and chipped to pieces.
"Here's an apple that's not ripe yet,"
the older said as he slammed the other's helm. The younger Fossaway was bruised and bloody by the time he yielded, but his foe was hardly winded. He raised his visor, looked about, saw Dunk, and said,
"You there! Yes, you, the big one! Knight of the Winged Chalice! Is that a longsword you wear?"
"It is mine by rights," Dunk said defensively. "I am Sir Duncan the Tall."
"And I, Sir Stephen Fossaway. Would you care to try me, Sir Duncan the Tall? It would be good to have someone new to cross swords with. My cousin's not ripe yet, as you've seen."
"Do it, Sir Duncan," urged the beaten Fossaway as he removed his helm. "I may not be ripe, but my good cousin is rotten to the core. Knock the seeds out of him." Dunk shook his head. Why were these lordlings involving him in their quarrel? He wanted no part of it. "I thank you, sir, but I have matters to attend." He was uncomfortable carrying so much coin. The sooner he paid Steely Pate and got his armor, the happier he would be. Sir Stephen looked at him scornfully.
"The hedge knight has matters."
He glanced about and found another likely opponent loitering nearby.
"Sir Grants, well met, come try me. I know every feeble trick my cousin Raymond has mastered, and it seems that Sir Duncan is to return to the hedges. Come, come."
Dunk stalked away red-faced. He did not have many tricks himself, feeble or otherwise, and he did not want anyone to see him fight until the tourney. The old man always said that the better you knew your foe, the easier it was to best him. Knights like Sir Stephen had sharp eyes to find a man's weakness at a glance. Dunk was strong and quick, and his weight and reach were in his favor, but he did not believe for a moment that his skills were the equal of these others. Sir Arlan had taught him as best he could, but the old man had never been the greatest of knights, even when young. The great knights did not live their lives in the hedges, nor die by the side of a muddy road. "That will not happen to me," Dunk vowed. "I will show them that I can be more than a hedge knight."
"Sir Duncan,"
the younger Fossaway hurried to catch him, "I should not have urged you to try my cousin. I was angry with his arrogance, and you are so large, I thought... Well, it was wrong of me. You wear no armor. He would have broken your hand if he could, or a knee. He likes to batter men in the training yard so they'll be bruised and vulnerable later, should he meet them in the lists." "I did not break you."
"No, but I am his own blood, though his is the senior branch of the apple tree, as he never ceases to remind me. I am Raymond Fossaway."
"Well met. Will you and your cousin ride in the tourney?"
"He will, for a certainty. As to me, would that I could. I'm only a squire, as yet. My cousin has promised to knight me, but insisted I am not ripe yet."
Raymond had a square face, a pug nose, and short woolly hair, but his smile was engaging.
"You have the look of a challenger, it seems to me. Whose shield do you mean to strike?"
"It makes no difference," said Dunk. That was what you were supposed to say, though it made all the difference in the world. "I will not enter the lists until the third day. And by then, some of the champions will have fallen."
"Yes," Raymond said. "Well, may the warrior smile on you, sir."
"And you?"
"If he is only a squire, what business do I have being a knight? One of us is a fool."
The silver in Dunk's pouch clinked with every step, but he could lose it all in a heartbeat, he knew. Even the rules of this tourney worked against him, making it very unlikely that he would face a green or feeble foe. There were a dozen different forms a tourney might follow, according to the whim of the lord who hosted it. Some were mock battles between teams of knights, others wild melees, where the glory went to the last fighter left standing. Where individual combats were the rule, pairings were sometimes determined by lot, and sometimes by the master of the games. Lord Ashford was staging this tourney to celebrate his daughter's 13th name day. The fair maid would sit by her father's side, as the reigning queen of love and beauty. 5 champions wearing her favors would defend her. All others must perforce be challengers, but any man who could defeat one of the champions would take his place and stand as a champion himself, until such time as another challenger unseated him. At the end of 3 days of jousting, the 5 who remained would determine whether the fair maid retained the crown of love and beauty or whether another would wear it in her place. Dunk stared at the grassy lists and the empty chairs on the viewing stand, and pondered his chances.
One victory was all he needed. Then he could name himself one of the champions of Ashford Meadow, if only for an hour. The old man had lived nigh on 60 years and had never been a champion. It's not too much to hope for, if the gods are good. He thought back on all the songs he had heard, songs of blind Simeon Star-Eyes, and noble Serwin of the Mirror Shield, of Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight, Sir Rhyme Redwine, and Florian the Fool. They had all won victories against foes far more terrible than any he would face. But they were great heroes, brave men of noble birth, except for Florian. And what am I, Duncan Fleabottom, or Sir Duncan the Tall? He supposed he would learn the truth of that soon enough. He hefted the sack of armour and turned his feet toward the merchant's stalls in search of Steely Pate. Egg had worked manfully at the campsite. Dunk was pleased. He had been half afraid his squire would run off again. "Did you get a good price for your palfrey?" the boy asked. "How did you know I'd sold her?" "You rode off and walked back, and if robbers had stolen her, you'd be more angry than you are." "I got enough for this." Dunk took out his new armour to show the boy. "If you're ever to be a knight, you'll need to know good steel from bad. Look here, this is fine work. This mail is double chain, each link bound to two others, you see? It gives more protection than single chain. And the helm, Pate's rounded the top. See how it curves? A sword or an axe will slide off, where they might bite through a flat-topped helm." Dunk lowered the great helm over his head. "How does it look?"
"There's no visor,"
Egg pointed out. "There are air holes. Visors are points of weakness." Steely Pate had said as much.
"If you knew how many knights had taken an arrow in the eye as they lifted their visor for a sock of cool air, you'd never want one," he'd told Dunk.
"There's no crest either," said Egg. "It's just plain."
Dunk lifted off the helm. "Plain is fine for the likes of me. See how bright the steel is? It'll be your task to keep it that way. You know how to scour mail?"
"In a barrel of sand," said the boy. "But you don't have a barrel. Did you buy a pavilion too, sir?"
"I didn't get that good a price. The boy is too bold for his own good. I ought to beat that out of him." He knew he would not, though. He liked the boldness. He needed to be bolder himself. "My squire is braver than I am, and more clever."
"You did well here, Egg," Dunk told him. "On the morrow, you'll come with me. Have a look at the tawny grounds. We'll buy oats for the horses and fresh bread for ourselves. Maybe a bit of cheese as well. They were selling good cheese at one of the stalls."
"I won't need to go into the castle, will I?"
"Why not?
One day I mean to live in a castle. I hope to win a place above the salt before I'm done." The boy said nothing. "Perhaps he fears to enter a lord's hall," Dunk reflected. "That's no more than might be expected. He will grow out of it in time." He went back to admiring his armour and wondering how long he would wear it. Sir Manfred was a thin man with a sour look on his face. He wore a black surcoat slashed with the purple lightning of House Dondarrion, but Dunk would have remembered him anyway by his unruly mane of red-gold hair. "Sir Arlen served your lord father when he and Lord Cairon burned the Vulture King out of the Red Mountains, sir," he said from one knee. "I was only a boy then, but I squired for him. Sir Arlen of Pennytree." Sir Manfred scowled.
"No, I know him not. Nor you, boy."
Dunk showed him the old man's shield. This was his sigil, the winged chalice.
"My lord father took 800 knights and near 4,000 foot into the mountains. I cannot be expected to remember every one of them, nor what shields they carried. It may be that you were with us, but..."
Sir Manfred shrugged. Dunk was struck speechless for an instant. "The old man took a wound in your father's service. How can you have forgotten him?"
"They will not allow me to challenge unless some knight or lord will vouch for me." "And what is that to me?" said Sir Manfred. "I've given you enough of my time, sir."
If he went back to the castle without Sir Manfred, he was lost. Dunk eyed the purple lightning embroidered across the black wool of Sir Manfred's surcoat and said,
"I remember your father telling the camp how your house got its sigil. One stormy night, as the first of your line bore a message across the Dornish marches, an arrow killed his horse beneath him and spilled him on the ground. Two Dornishmen came out of the darkness in ringmail and crested helms. His sword had broken beneath him when he fell. When he saw that, he thought he was doomed. But as the Dornishman closed to cut him down, lightning cracked from the sky. It was a bright, burning purple.